Good afternoon. Thank you for tuning in to Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Heller. Our special guest today is Carol Scales. Here is your host, Ann Heller.
Oh, that's right, Andy. We are here with an absolutely fascinating person. I know you're really going to enjoy this interview today. So many of you here in Greenwood know Carol. It's Carol Scales, and yes, she has a PhD. She's an RN. She's been in the Navy. She's been down there in Columbia, moved up here to Greenwood, and had just a fascinating life, and we're here to talk about some of it, as well as Project Linus, which is how this all started. But I love talking to people about their lives, and welcome to the show today, Carol.
Well, thank you very much.
It's good to have you here, and I know that you are originally from Connecticut, is that right?
Originally from New York to South Carolina via Connecticut.
That's right.
Now, went down in 1988.
Well, you might almost become a South Carolinian.
I don't know how long that takes. I don't have enough y'alls yet.
I understand that. I'm from Maine originally. All right. Well, anyways, you grew up in New York, and you were... Now, tell us a little bit about how did you get from New York, Connecticut, down to South Carolina?
Well, from New York, I went in after graduating from college in upstate New York. I went into the Navy, and that got me as far as Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. Then I came back to New York and went to grad school in Connecticut and stayed there, worked at... the university at Yale, and then went up and met my husband at a mental health center in, not as a patient, I have to say, but we both worked at a community mental health center in Meriden, Connecticut. And it was from Meriden that we moved down here in 1988.
Wow. Now, when you were growing up, what did you want to be?
Always wanted to be a nurse. From the first nurse kit with the wooden thermometer and the cloth, the tourniquets, always wanted to be a nurse. And my parents were not too sure that was going to be a take, since we didn't have any nurses in the family. So my father thought that it would be best if I went to a university program, because undoubtedly I would change my major and he wouldn't lose his investment if
right.
I went to a hospital program. So it worked out very well.
It worked out. Now, what about, how did you decide, because when was that you went into the Navy? What year was that like?
I went into the Navy in 1962. I was signed on as my last year of college, so I was enlisted for 1 year, and then I was commissioned when I graduated from the university.
But you always thought you wanted to be a nurse for the Marines, right?
I did. That's
why was that?
I don't know. It was sort of glamorous. You know, it was post-Korea, and there were a lot of... you know, glamorous things about the military.
Good-looking guys.
Good-looking guys, and, you know, being the Florence Nightingale, that would help them. And then I, to my astonishment, learned that the Marines don't have nurses and that the Navy takes care of them. So the Navy was the answer.
But how did your family feel about that?
Not thrilled.
Not thrilled.
No, they had gotten over the fact after 4 years that I was going to be a nurse. But then when I announced that I really wanted to go into the military, my dad was not at all supportive. Women in the military, at that time, there were not many. They were usually Supply Corps or support services or... But he talked with some of his buddies, and they said, well, nurses tended to be different. So But by that time, I was emancipated to be able to
21.
Make my own decisions. And actually, my dad really enjoyed the time I was on active duty. I was stationed in Philadelphia, which was where the Army-Navy game was then held. And so he got to go to that, and he got to go to the officers' club. So
he liked the perks.
He liked the perks. In fact, we did a trip to California, and he said, bring your uniform so we can go. You can go out. uniform. It turned out all right, and it was a very good decision for me as well.
What made it a good decision for you, Carol?
Well, it promotes leadership very early in your career. I don't think I would have gotten the experiences in a general hospital that I got in the military from a leadership standpoint and from an exposure to numbers of different disorders that you might not see.
Now, in Philadelphia, there the hospital concentrated on mental and orthopedic?
There was. The Philadelphia Naval Hospital no longer exists, and the Philadelphia Naval Base doesn't exist, but it was quite a large entity in South Philly. And Philadelphia was the head for orthopedics, so we had a large prosthetic department and for neuropsych. And I started in orthopedics, and then about 4 months into my tour, I moved down to the neuropsych unit. And that's where I got interested in psych mental health, and that's my specialty.
Wow. Now, you were telling me that it was always an interesting experience while you were there when they'd announced, like, maybe a French ship had come in.
Oh, yes. We had the naval base in Philadelphia was quite active, even though it was on a river.
I still find that hard to believe, but anyways.
And we had a number of foreign ships that would come into port, and there were lots of interesting stories about those ships. But we would get a call from the chief nurse saying, you know, they'd like some ladies to come over tonight. They're having an open house, and they had French pastries and hors d'oeuvres, and we got little bottles of French wine when the French ship was in. So it was kind of fun. And, of course, the officers' club was a busy one because we had a lot of ships coming in, and it became the mothball fleet area, so it was an interesting base.
That is so cool. You know, it's got to be great to be able to look back on these experiences and remember about them. But you were there right really at the beginning of the Vietnam War.
That's
is that right.
Right? That's right. I got out just about, I think, around the time of the Tet Offensive. And really, we didn't know too much about. We were beginning to see some casualties, particularly pilots. I remember a young lieutenant who came in who was a double amputee. And we were all shocked. I mean, he was a nice young guy, Marine.
Mm-hmm.
A helicopter pilot, and he had had a crash in Cambodia, and everybody's saying, "Where is Cambodia? You know, where?" You know, we heard a little bit about Vietnam, so it was just the beginning, as we heard. After I did the 2-year active duty, I did reserve duty, and that meant I went on active duty for at least 2 weeks every year, and that was interesting. I would go to different hospitals, and then we would begin to see what flying in, for instance, to St. Albans in New York, fellas that looked like they had, to me, they had battle dressings on. They were flown into Fort Benning, and that was pretty scary stuff. Parents were there waiting, and they, you know, just seeing revved up there.
Sure. So you've seen, even though you weren't there, you've seen what happens in war.
Yeah.
So, wow. Now, we are here at Sharp Passes Gallery on the 72 Bypass. Do need to tell you, gold is down today, so it's a good day. Don't let it drop too far. Come see us. I've had a slew of people in here this morning saying, I don't want to miss out. So come see us at Sharp Passes Gallery. Still right around that $1,500 mark, but if it drops much more, it's going to start to cost you. So come see us today at Sharp Passes Gallery. We are going to hear a word from our sponsors, then we'll be back, so don't you go away. You're listening to WLMA. I'm Ann Eller. My very special guest is Carol Scales. We're going to be talking about the Linus Project and more adventures of Carol. So don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
You're tuned in to Meet Me at the Diner. Your host, Ann Eller. Our special guest today is Carol Scales. Live from Sharp Facets Gallery, here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking to Carol Scales, a native New Yorker, right down here in South Carolina. That's right. You know, it just seems, you know, when you look around at all the advantages to living in South Carolina, there are a lot, aren't there?
There certainly are.
There are. And you can always go to the city if you want to go to the city and get away and see all the bright lights. But anyways, you've been here since 1988. You were in the military. You had a great time. Lots of good fun, meeting lots of people, I guess. You maintain any of those connections from the past?
Yes, I have roommates. One was a Medical Service Corps officer, and one was a dietitian at Philadelphia. And we had a 40-year reunion in Tennessee 3 years ago now it was. And after spending a long weekend there, we decided that if need be, we could probably still live together again. We've all gone our separate ways, but it was a good time. So, yes, I do keep in touch with them.
That's nice.
And it's like the military is like a large fraternity. You know, you meet somebody from the military, and they know somebody who knew was stationed at such and such, and they knew somebody. So it's kind of a nice network. It really is. With a lot of rivalry. You know, Army-Navy game, if the Navy wins, I'm always emailing my Army friends, and they do vice versa. But it's all in the good spirit. We're all working for the same goals, but it adds to the fun.
What do you think, I mean, this is just off the topic here, what do you think about all the strife that we're involved in the world right now, Afghanistan, Iraq, and now Libya? You know, as you look back to when you were in it and you've seen so much, what do you think?
Well, I worry a lot. I worry that the young men and women who are serving, who are putting literally their life on the line every day, I hope they're not being used as political pawns in doing something that's beyond what we've been trained to do. When you get into country building and political issues, that's really not what the military has been prepared for, and it's a stretch. So I worry that I work with the National Guard here and have in the past in their deployments and their returns. And to see them uprooted from their families, to see the children crying when mom and dad are leaving, and to know the sacrifice not only the soldiers and military are making, but the families are making, I hope that we're using them correctly for the right reasons.
Absolutely. That's very well said, Carol. Very well said. But now let's talk a little bit about, you know, so you're in the military, you stayed in the reserves, and I want to know how you got from Meridian, Connecticut. What made you come, is that right?
Meridian,
to move down here to South Carolina. That seems like a big stretch there.
Well, it was. One of those situations where it might have been a bad day at the office, and I was looking through a professional journal, saw an ad for a position in Columbia that had a lot of the things that I had done in my career all in one position. And I said to my husband, here's my whole life career in one job. And it was at William S. Hall, which was the flagship hospital of the Department of Mental Health in South Carolina, and on a lark, we came down, and I submitted a resume, and they asked me to come down and talk with them, look at the facility. And we had never been. We moved out to Columbia, had nobody down here. My husband had grown up a little bit in Hickory, North Carolina, so he was a bit more southern than I was, but he was a New Yorker. And they offered me the position, and then there was the big decision about, you know, moving. But it was a point in our life when it made sense, and it was absolutely the best decision for us.
Wow. That was when Bull Street and that big mental health, I mean, was it really, wasn't it, in the state?
Well, it's an interesting state because all of the facilities in South Carolina, except for Patrick B. Harris up in Anderson, were all centered in Columbia, and at a time when we were thinking about community mental health, if you had a mental disorder, you had to be routed from your home and your family and your friends and your school and sent to Columbia to be, quote, fixed, and then you came back to your community. And that was really not the thrust of community mental health. But all of the facilities were in Columbia, and today they're all in Columbia other than mental health inpatient units.
Sure. Of course, they sold the Bull Street here
recently,
didn't they?
They sold Bull Street, which was prime property right downtown, and we've lost our mental health facility here at the hospital.
It's a problem, isn't it? I mean, you know, when you talk about mental health, we should have this type of thing right here in Greenwood.
Well, it's a problem because looking at the economy, this is the time when stress is building in families, people without work, husbands are home, the whole family constellation changes, people are worried about what's going to happen, what they're going to have to give up their homes, they're going to have to move in with family, have family move in with them. Those are all stressors that we know precipitate depression, post-traumatic stress, all of those disorders. And here at a time whenever we're cutting back on it. So but that's always in mental health is kind of the stepchild of the medical field. And whenever there's a need to cut resources, they come up top on the list.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame.
It is a shame also. I mean, this is kind of off the subject too, that we choose just to manage people, that people don't actually get true help. We manage them with pills and this type of thing. Don't you think that...
Well, our research says that it's the best outcomes come from a combination of what we call the talking therapies and then the medical therapies. And, you know, it is easy to just give a pill for everything, and to some degree we are a pill-oriented society. You know, if we don't come away with a prescription from the doctor when we've seen them, we've felt they haven't done their job. And you can see their marketing now, not to physicians, but to the public. So people are going in and saying, well, I saw this on television, and, you know, you didn't order this. This looks like, well, all the symptoms I have. And it's probably the most expensive of the medications. A lot of the old generics are still, good meds.
Yeah.
So it's a really difficult thing, this medical healthcare problem we're in.
It is.
It's going to be interesting to see.
To see where it goes. But, yeah, speaking about TV, I love listening to this. This will cure this, and this symptom. But what you get for this is this, and this. If I had those problems, I think I'd say, I'll keep the disease and the heck with the side effects.
That's true. And then you end up with another medication that treats the side effects, and people get... compounded things. So it's very tricky.
Right. So why did you get interested in mental health? What was the impetus to get into that? Because that is a very specialized field.
It is. I think probably I was interested because it is more using yourself as the therapeutic agent than treatments or procedures. It is how you assess the individual and how you interact with them that has an impact on the outcome. And I thought that was challenging.
That is challenging, and it would always be different. No two cases are exactly the same.
Well, you have the same thing in the medical side, too, but this way it is using your skills in a different way.
Absolutely. She's probably a heck of a negotiator.
I don't know about that.
All right, Carol, we had a couple of calls come in. If you'd like to call and ask Carol a question or have a comment, give us a call, 229-7984. Jane Meanders, retired Air Force. She was a nurse. She said, a living example of so many men, beautiful men, so little time. She says, congrats from the Air Force nurse who also helped with that expression. She was in the Air Force, I guess, from 1962 to 1987. She said she'd love to connect with you. Would you give her telephone number?
Sure.
What's your telephone number?
My telephone number, I can call her. Is her telephone number on
No,
there?
Okay.
It's 864-227-0687.
Okay, 227.
In the book.
07. Oh, what was that? 227.
0687.
0687. So give her a call, Jane. She'd love to talk to you. She's also in the book. And then we had a call from George Shirley, ex-wounded Marine, 1966. Tonight he will reserve a little prayer of thanks for what you did. You sound great.
Oh, well, thank you, George.
How about
thank
that?
Thank you.
That's really great. Hey, we are here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking to Carol Scales. She has been quite an interesting person out there in the world. She's still living it. She's now retired. We're going to talk a little bit about Landers. She's retired, though. She works with the Linus Project. She's a National Park Service volunteer at Star Fort. She's a master gardener, and she's a member of a lot of other organizations. You got to stay tuned. We only have less than half an hour to finish this story up today. We'll have to have her back. But, hey, stay right with us. South Carolina News is up next.
These days are ours. Share them with me. Goodbye, gray sky.
What does WLMA stand for? Well, it stands for Wow, Let's Meet Again, right here on 1350 AM, Greenwood and the Lakelands News Talk Radio Station.
Welcome back to Meet Me at the Diner. Your host, Ann Ella. Our special guest today is Carol Scales. Live from Sharp Passes Gallery, here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. We are back here at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 Bypass. We are talking with Carol Scales here. She was in the Navy as a nurse. She came down here to South Carolina, worked for the psychiatric department there on Bull Street, and then somehow she ended up here in Greenwood. How did that happen? Same idea, dissatisfaction.
Not quite. When I had gotten my master's, I always wanted to teach, and most of my experience up until then in nursing was administration. I was the director of nursing of a number of facilities, and there was a teaching job open at Lander in psych mental health. And I thought, well, getting along there, and I had started my doctoral work at USC. So I applied, and lo and behold, they said yes. And so I went from a full-time administrative position to a 9-month appointment, traveling 160 miles round trip each day from Columbia for 5 years. And it worked out. I really enjoyed it. So that is the longest. Lander was the longest tenure I had had in any job. I'm usually a 4-year cycler. And I stayed at Lander 12 years and retired. I had been the dean of the School of Nursing. So.
And boy, that School of Nursing sure has grown, hasn't it?
It certainly has, and it is a very good program.
Absolutely.
I was pleased to be a part of it.
Now, when did the nursing program actually start? I mean,
Well, it was the first associate degree program in the state of South Carolina, and it partnered with SELF. SELF had had a program, a hospital program, and in a very entrepreneurial way, looked to Lander to host a 2-year program. And I believe it was in 86, in the late 80s anyway, when it became a bachelor's program, a 4-year program, probably coincided with the establishment of Piedmont Tech that then had a 2-year program.
Sure.
And Lander was the first program, nursing program, in the state of South Carolina to offer
that.
An online nursing program.
Wow.
So in our little offices, we all learned how to do online teaching and got that going. So we were ahead of the curve in a lot of things. But it's still a nice small program where you get to know the students and they get to know the faculty. Sometimes we got to know them better than they wanted us to get to
know
them. But that goes with the territory.
Absolutely. Well, as Dr. Ball says about Lander, if you think you can come to Lander and hide, you can't.
That's correct.
So, anyways, you retired in 2004 after serving as dean of the School of Nursing, and it looks like you decided you weren't going to just sit back and relax. You have been involved in so many things: volunteer with hospice, a volunteer with the National Park Service at Star Fort, became a master gardener.
Yes, that was a long time. I knew I was going to do that when I retired. That was on my list. I had gardened in Connecticut, and, of course, gardening in the South is a lot different. The first time I saw them prune anything down here, I was horrified that it would ever recover. But that has been a lot of fun, and I still enjoy the gardening here.
That's right. And then you got involved with Project Linus. Now, what is Project Linus?
Project Linus is a national organization that provides handmade blankets for seriously ill or traumatized children. Started in 1998 in Denver, Colorado. A lady was reading an article in Parade magazine, and one of the interviews was a little girl who was getting chemotherapy. And the little girl talked about her blankie, her security blanket that she took to every chemotherapy treatment. And this woman decided that every child should have that kind of an option. And so she began making blankets for the Denver Children's Cancer Center. And her friends began making blankets, and then chapters developed. And it was taken over by two ladies now who are the unpaid organizers of this. It's all volunteer. And they're headquartered in Bloomington, Illinois. And I'm headed out there the end of this month to go to Project Linus University, where all the chapter presidents congregate, and we learn new things and get involved in activities, learn new quilting techniques and new fleece techniques, and it's always a lot of fun to talk with other chapter leaders.
So will you be taking some of your most spectacular blankets with you to show off?
Well, they have every year that they have convention, they have a theme, and this year it's Raining Cats and Dogs. And we were all given, those who will be attending, swatches of cloth and asked to make a blanket. And then they put them up on the wall. And it is simply amazing that with the same little piece of material, how many different takes on that there is. And one of the quilters in town said she would make that showcase blanket. So I'm looking, I haven't seen it, but I'm looking forward to seeing it and having it hang on the wall and see how it compares with the others. But we have had what they're called challenge quilts.
Mm-hmm.
That's quilters do. Quilter talk.
That's pretty cool.
Our folks are, you've heard of volunteers.
Yes.
And you've heard of mousketeers. Well, in Project Linus Talk, we are blanketeers, and we have about 40 active blanketeers covering the five counties that our particular chapter provides blankets for.
That's pretty huge.
It is. It is. And people like it because there's no quota. You can make one blanket a year and be a blanketeer, or you can make, as one of our older ladies who just learned quilting a couple of years ago has a goal of making one a month. And she's very faithful about that, and they're delightful blankets. So, you know, there's no quota, there's no deadline, they don't have to all be in. We've had more recent, all of the blankets that are made in the area stay to children in our area, with the exception that we have had calls from National, and we sent 150 blankets to Japan.
During the
150 to Haiti. We sent 50 to Japan. We more recently have sent blankets to Tuscaloosa and to Joplin, Missouri.
Wow.
So we will get calls nationally. And it's just amazing for me. I send an email out to the blanketeers. I said, I've made a commitment for this many blankets to go. And all of a sudden, blankets start arriving on my front porch. They are just a marvelous group of women that are both generous with their talents and with their time, and with the materials.
Well, it's pretty neat because you brought some with you here today. We can't see them on the radio, but it looks like some fabulous quilts. Looks like some have been crocheted, and they are so soft. And can I have one? But they are beautiful, and when you look at them, they all have sewn inside them Project Linus, and made with tender loving care, and a picture of Linus with his banky right there. So what a wonderful project. Some are just fleece with extra stuff on them, and just wonderful projects here. Now, how did you decide that Project Linus was something that you would like to get involved in?
Well, I have been a closet crafter all my life. Do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And I have a small family, and you run out of people to donate to these wonderful craft items to us. My son said, Mom, another blanket? So I saw in Woman's World magazine a little article about Project Linus, and my neighbor next door is also a crafter. And so we started making blankets, and there is a chapter up in Anderson. So we'd make four or five blankets, go up, make a day of it, have lunch in Anderson, come home and feel, you know, at least they were these things that we love to do. We're going to some place that they could use them. And we decided maybe our own community could use this. So in 2006, we were chartered. Now, you have to apply to be chartered, and they check with all the groups around you because there's not a finite, infinite number of blanketeers out there. You don't want to draw the Anderson people.
Right.
But we were chartered. And interestingly, there is not a chapter in Greenville.
Wow.
Or Spartanburg.
That is interesting, isn't it?
You know, and so we do get some blankets that are done up there that we're the closest group that are donated. We had a Daily Vacation Bible School group here in Greenwood that took Project Linus as their mission group. And, of course, the Tide fleece blankets that everybody made for Christmas are easy for kids to do.
Sure.
We had a Girl Scout troop that worked on some blankets for us and got their leadership badge and teamwork badge for doing that. So it is really
It works in a lot of different venues. Hey, we're here with Carol Scales. We are talking about the Linus Project right here. We're talking about blanketeers. Would you like to be a blanketeer? It's easy to belong. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk more about it. So you stay right with us right here on WLMA. We'll hear a word from our sponsors. And, yes, we'll be back. And if you have a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
There's nothing can hold me when I hold you.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276.
You're with us at Meet Me at the Diner with host Ann Eller. Our special guest today is Carol Scales. Here's your host, Ann Eller.
Oh, that's right. I'm talking to Carol Scales. She is retired from Lander University. She's been everywhere. She's done so many wonderful things. She was in the Navy, and we just had a call from Mary Jane Coleman. She lives over on the Lawrence side of the lake. She was, 1964 to 1994, retired military pharmacist. She says this sounds like something she would like to do, Carol. So how about that?
Wonderful.
That's right.
Wonderful.
So I guess we could give your telephone number.
Absolutely.
227-0687. Mary Jane, give her a call after the show, 227-0687. She'd love to talk to you about the Linus Project. In fact, anybody that's interested in being part of this, whether you think you can do one blanket or 100 blankets, it doesn't matter. But it's just such a great cause.
It is. It is.
What do you do? Now, who here in our area actually ends up with the blankets?
Ah, good question. We cover Greenwood, Lawrence, Edgefield, Abbeville, and McCormick counties. We do provide blankets for Newberry and some other places, but that's our catchment area. So all of the hospitals here in Greenwood, that would be the neonatal intensive care unit, so little baby blankets for the bassinet, the pediatric unit itself, the emergency room itself, emergency room in Abbeville, in Edgefield, the children's home, Connie Maxwell, McCormick Children's Home, Thornwell, Bowers Rogers, Child's Place. Then we give some blankets to the police advocate officers. These are the officers who go in, and sometimes a house where there's drugs being made and the child is in, the child has to be removed. We give them some blankets. We provide the Red Cross for the fires. If you've noticed, a lot of fires happen at night, and little kids are extricated from their homes in their jammies. And if the firemen or the Red Cross have a blanket to give them, that helps, too.
Now, what do you think it means to these children? You've heard stories back from, from people that have given the blankets out.
Right. I'm the beneficiary of those little stories, and it's just amazing. We give to the hospice camp in Lawrence. These are children who've lost a significant person in their family, and they have a little grieving camp. It happened in October a couple years ago, and they had their little Linus blankets on them, and the first thing they did was a hayride. And so the director, Gren Cartledge, said, "You should have seen them, Carol. They were all in the hay wagon with their little blankets around them." And a little 7-year-old girl turned to her and said, "I understand that we can keep these blankets. Is that true?" Because a lot of the children think they have to turn them in after an event, and they're really thrilled to know that they're theirs to take home. And Gwen said, yes, you can keep this money. She said, well, I'm putting it away. I'm going to save it for my children. But I think it tells you how important sometimes for these children that have nothing. We had a little girl we gave in McCormick who came through the DSS program, and they had given her a blanket and came to the McCormick Children's Home. That one thing she brought was her blanket that she had, you know, so they do travel with them. And there's some nice stories. We got a call. I got a call at home one day from a lady whose daughter had received a blanket at the neonatal intensive care unit at Self, and they were doing a Thanksgiving basket for a family, and they learned in interviewing the family that one of the children didn't have any blanket. Do you think this would be appropriate? I said, absolutely. And she said, well, there's also a sister involved. I said, well, we'll take care of that. So, you know, it went in there. We've been giving blankets to children whose parents are being deployed. Mm-hmm. I go to some of those deployments. Now, some kids are oblivious that their parents are being deployed and they're out running around.
Right.
But there are some whose hearts are just broken. And so I'll give Dad the blanket and say, you know, will you hold this blanket and put some daddy stuff on it, because then when you're gone, they'll be able to wrap the blanket like it's your arms around it. And they take the blanket, and you see these great big soldiers carrying around a Project Linus blanket until they get on the bus, but they're very good about it. So we try. We do also to individual children. I will read in the newspaper of someone, you know, there'll be a story about a youngster who's going through chemotherapy or having a really difficult time, and we will make every effort to get that child a blanket individually, too. So wherever we see, if anybody hears or knows of somebody, child that could use this, a blanket, and it would be supportive. We had we gave it to a youngster who did pass away, and the mother said to me, I slept with that blanket for the first month. It was the closest thing that had been with them. So it means a great deal. Our blanketeers, many of them say a prayer as they're doing the blanket for whatever child receives it. I pray for the blanketeers that they continue to make their blankets so we can continue this great work. But it has been an amazing experience and one that continues to grow, and we continue to find avenues of people that will need them. And just when I think I'm running out, there'll be a big supply over at Hancock, who has been our partner in this process since the beginning, and people can drop off blankets there, and they have a place, and I pick them up. My job is to wash them all,
mm-hmm.
make sure that they're washable, they don't, you know, have any problems, and then I do all the labeling. So that's my sort of hands-on every blanket. And 3,000 blankets later.
3,000 blankets?
Later.
Wow.
We are moving along.
And that's been since 2006.
2006. 5 years. We had our fifth birthday early in May. Nationally, they have given out 3,800,000 blankets.
3 million blankets, 3,000 blankets. Carol, that's pretty darn good in our area.
Well, it just speaks to amazing, generous women who give their time and their talent and purchase the supplies and work together. Some of them do it in groups, and we have people learning how to quilt as they're helping out at various
places. And it's nice because they're smaller blankets. They don't have to be.
Small. I do. Here's a double one. You know, this is the kind we've all done, two pieces of fleece tied together. In South Carolina, you don't need that weight. I save a lot of those big blankets for the Salvation Army because when they get requests, it is the blanket for the child. It's not a snuggle blanket.
Right.
It's the bed blanket. So I start putting the larger ones aside for places where the child has a bed, like Connie Mack, Thornwell, where they're living. Others, like the ambulance blankets in Newbury, are small and kind of, you know, hold on to while I'm riding in the ambulance sort of thing. So I think the dimensions on the website, and there is a website for Project Linus, which is www.projectlinus.org, and they have wonderful patterns. Crocheting patterns and knitting patterns and quilting patterns that you can get right off there. But I think they say the minimum size around 36 by 45.
That's a comfy size.
Yeah.
Comfy size.
You know, and for the nurseries where the in the cribs, you can't do a big one.
Like, so sure.
It works out.
So you can really make several blankets when you're talking about that smaller size.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so that's pretty great. You know, it has been amazing to have you here today and talk about the Linus Project. Of course, you can go to their website, linusproject.org.
Mm-hmm. Linus. No project. Oh. Project Linus.
Project Linus, okay.
Dot
ProjectLinus.org. Check that out online. Give Carol a call, 227-0687, if you'd like to get involved in this project. She is a fascinating person. Not only has she done Project Linus, but what do you do? We've got 2 minutes. What do you do with the National Park Service at Star Fort?
Well, they will call if the rangers are having a meeting, and I'll very often cover the visitor center. But my favorite thing is when they have that October candlelight walk service.
Oh, that's a great one.
And then I get to, you know, meet people and all the people in Greenwood that come year after year. It's a wonderful experience. So when they have some of their reenactments, they use volunteers to help out.
Absolutely. Well, listen, it has been fascinating to have you here. We're going to have you back again because there's so many other topics that we could talk about here. Hey, if you'd like to connect with her, she was in the Navy. She worked in Columbia. She came down here to South Carolina, just as she says, might have had a bad day at work and saw this job in South Carolina. She's stayed here ever since. She was the Dean of Nursing over there at Lander from 1992 to 2004. She hasn't stopped yet. What do you have to say about volunteering, Carol, just as a way to keep involved?
Oh, I think there's so many places where you can feel that you can use parts or all of your skills, you know, and you can always say, no, I can't do that. So it has some flexibility, but it's been a great joy for me, and it's been a really exciting experience.
Absolutely. Keeps you involved. Hey, we've been talking with Carol Scales with Project Linus. If you'd like to make blankets, if you'd like to do one, or you'd like to do 100, hey, she doesn't care. She'd just like to talk to you. It's projectlinus.org, and her phone number, again, 227-0687. Give her a call if you'd like to connect. Carol, thanks so much for coming out today.
Oh, thank you for having me and giving me an opportunity to talk about things I love.
Absolutely. This is your favorite radio station, WLMA, right here in Greenwood. There will be a podcast on the website, WLMA.net. So, Carol, you can go back and listen to it, and you can tell other people about it so you can tell them about your story. Thanks so much. Bye-bye, Andy.
Bye, Ann.